Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Bari al-khalaika ajma'in. Wa salat wa salam ala rasulihi wa habibihi abil qasim Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. Wa ala ahli bayti at-tayyibin at-tahirin al-ma'asumin. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, brothers and sisters. The series of topics about creating an honorable society, I think is a very good one. I think it's a very good one because I think this is a message that we in the diaspora, which is the place of exile, the home away from home that is not our complete home, is very important for us. Because in my opinion, the Muslims in general and us Shia in particular and especially, we lack community. We do. Don't think that your physical presence here means that you're part of a community. We have communities in the plural, many of them being dysfunctional. But we do not have a unified community in particular, which if we did, it would give us tremendous power in this environment in which we live. Not only this, but if our communities possessed the qualities of an Islamic community, then it would be a beacon of light, attracting even non-Muslims to live among us. I personally have seen in the mid-70s and 80s attempts to create such Islamic communities, and they experience certain levels of success and failure, and failures largely due to the infiltration or the activities of the state in the United States to undermine such communities. And I remember in one particular such community, which was a physical geographical location in New York City, I remember meeting one non-Muslim woman who told me that she lived in such a neighborhood and that she never felt safer than anywhere else in New York City. And if you live in the black areas in New York City, you have an idea what I mean. It is dangerous in many of these areas, very dangerous. But she said that she felt very, very comfortable and safe, that she could leave her front door open whenever she went out and nobody would rob her home. And that was very significant because I have an aunt who lives in Brooklyn, in the Flatbush area. And she's got on her door maybe about 5 or 6 locks. Locks that I can't even open from the inside. And she tells me that you could enter her apartment to steal something, but you can't leave with anything because the window is too small for a man to go through, for a man with a TV to go through, to be precise. So this is very, very important to me, that attempts had been made in the United States to create such a community and they had been successful. So what I'd like to talk about today is basically about, in this series that I have, is basically about the akhlaq or the behavioral requirements for such a community. And inshallah, hopefully we will reflect upon it and we will try to implement it in our time. A community is nothing but the interrelationship between people in a defined social context. That's what a community is. An interrelationship, a certain prescribed, defined type of relationship between people in a defined environment. This is a community. And when I say we are not a community while we are here, I mean we are not a community in the objective, general sense of the word. We are a community here at this moment because we do have certain prescribed types of relationships that are customarily assumed when we get together. And so we cannot talk about community without talking about our relationships with each other. And in that context, I'd like to start by mentioning a very interesting statement by Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam. Where he says, a believer has 7 rights incumbent upon his fellow believer. Each believer has 7 rights that his fellow believer should observe, which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made obligatory on all of us. And Allah will ask us about them. First, he says, Al-Jalalu lahu fi aynihi, that believer should be such that in the eyes of another believer, he should esteem him highly. He should esteem him highly. So that when we look at each other, we see each other with esteem. We see each other in a noble state. We see each other in a majestic state. We do not look down upon each other. We do not look down upon X because he's the T-boy, or Y because he's the gardener, or Z because he is illiterate, or B because he is poor, or X because he is darker in color than me, or what have you. The believer must look at the other believer with esteem in his eyes. That's the first thing. There's a hadith by Imam Hassan alayhi salam. When he's talking about humility, and he defines humility as such that whenever you or he meets somebody, he always assumes that that person is better than him. This is an Imam Ma'asum talking. He's not lying. He's saying that whenever he meets somebody, he assumes that that person is better than him. And you think about it. You think about it. You might have, for example, lots of ilm, lots of knowledge. And you look at a person, he might have that knowledge, but he might be a better friend than you. He might not have your wealth that you have or look as good as you, but he might be a better father than you. He might not be wearing the same beautiful clothes like you, but he could be a better husband or a better wife than you. Because the ghaib is greater than what is apparent. And so, when you look at somebody, you see greatness in them. You see jalal in them. You see a majesty in them. That's the first thing a believer has a right upon another believer for. And you think about it. You think about a society where everybody esteems everybody else. You know, in Japan, when 2 strangers meet, they bow. What is this bowing about? This bowing is an acknowledgement that the other person is so exalted that he requires or he necessitates somebody bowing to him. When we Muslims see each other, what do? We place our right hands on our hearts and we bow to them. This means the same thing. This is a traditional society. These are societies that are rooted in the idea of human beings being the Khalifatullah on the earth, being the representatives of God on the earth. And as such, you give that recognition not just to the individual in front of you, but to what he represents. And that person represents this. He represents, as it was, in a sense, the image of God on the earth in front of you. And this is what you bow to. You bow to what you don't see. You bow to what is better than you in that particular person. You have a society like this, you would not have a society that would be you know, divided on the basis of class and ethnicity and nationality and money and wealth and so forth and so on. Give salawat to the Holy Prophet Muhammad and his family. The second one he said is al-wuddu lahu fi sadrihi, to have love for him in his heart. To have love for him in his heart. And this follows from the first one, because we love only beauty. Beauty is the only object of love. You do not love ugliness. Nobody loves ugliness unless they confuse ugliness with beauty. Okay? They can do that. You could confuse ugliness with beauty. You could mistake ugliness for beauty. But ugliness is not beauty. The relationship that a person has to beauty that they recognize is called love. Because beauty attracts them to itself. It attracts them to itself. You can have beauty in a physical appearance. You can have beauty in behavior. You can have beauty in order. You can have beauty in justice. You can have beauty in wisdom. Beauty exists in so many different forms. It is the spiritual person who is able to perceive beauty in the highest level. You know of this lovely story of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi, who was the most positive in outcome or outlook. When he saw a glass that had water halfway, he does not see a glass that is half empty. He sees a glass that is half full. He always sees beauty in everything. And so the story goes, he was walking along with his companions and they passed the carcass of a dead donkey that was rotting. And his companion said, "Oh, how awful is its smell." And he said, "But how white is its teeth." This is seeing beauty. Hazrat Zainab, in facing the carnage of Karbala, in facing the murderous cutting down of those she loved, of those beautiful people, in seeing the devilishness of the opponents, when they asked her what she saw in Karbala, she said, "All I saw was beauty. All I saw was beauty." And what was that beauty? That was the beauty of the human spirit. That was the beauty of standing up for justice, even if you would lose everything in the course of it. This is what she saw. And so when we meet our brother and sister, and when we look at them, and when we assume that what we don't see is beautiful, what else other relationship can we have for them but one of love? But one of love. And love is something that has tenderness in it. It has care in it. It has assuming the right of that person in it. It's a community based upon love. Brothers and sisters, I tell you, we don't have enough love in our community. We don't. We don't have love enough in our community. When we give salams at the end of our prayer, how do we give salams? We don't give salams with any attention. It is just a ritual. You know what a ritual is? A ritual is something that you practice habitually. You don't think about it. You know, if you keep on driving back and forth to work every day, sometimes you get home from work after driving and you don't even know how you got there. You don't even know how you got there. Why? Because it was ritual. Because you were just doing it automatically. So when we give salams, we don't look at the person in their face. You know? In fact, sometimes we turn away from them thinking about the other salams while we are giving it. Salam alaikum. Salam alaikum. You know what I do sometimes? I grab the hand and I hold it. And they wonder what's going on. And they meet a smile. They meet a smile. And this is our relationship with each other. Okay? We relate to each other according to form, according to custom. But we do not relate to each other in terms of recognizing each other's majesty. And we don't relate to each other on the basis of love. The other one he says is al-muasatu lahu fi malihi, to assist him financially from his own wealth. That is the right of your fellow believer upon you, to assist you financially if you are in need. And if you have wealth, to assist them financially if they are in need. And so what institutions like these ought to be are institutions as such that those of us who have wealth should come to these institutions and say, oh, Sheikh so-and-so, I am blessed by Allah to have, well, very good means. And I would like to place myself at the service of those who are in need. And others could come and say, oh, so-and-so, that I am in need and I'm looking for help. And it doesn't necessarily have to be that personal. It could be on a structural basis. Centers like this and like all the others in this city could act as credit unions. These things empower your community. There's a community in Canada, in Toronto, the Korean Christian community, Korean Christians. And they are newcomers to Canada. But they have grown tremendously, much more so than many established communities there. And one of the reasons why they have done so, and many of them are in business, one of the reasons why they have done so is their churches also function as credit unions. Their churches function as credit unions. So you want a loan to buy a house, or you want a loan to open a business, you go to the church before you go to the bank. We talk about we don't like interest and so forth and so on, but we do not try to create the structures, the institutional structures, to make us independent of that. And this is why this community is growing by leaps and bounds. So you, as Mr. Rich Man, you don't have to just put your money to give in charity. It's important. It's very good. But you could put your money to engage in a profitable venture by empowering other people. This is what you can do. For unfortunately, centers, many of them like these, only function for what? For ritual. For ritual. Okay? Thursday you come for Dua Komail. Every day you come together for prayer. You know, Dua Tawassul. You know, what else? What else? Have majalis like this, and then we go home. This is ritual. This is ritual. But you don't expect us to go out there and do this for you. It has to come from you. That's another problem we have. Our problem that we have is that we expect ulama to do everything for us. Like if we are babies, I think what they should do is buy a million What's that thing the babies put in their mouth? You call it a soother in Canada. What do you call it? What? What? Dummy? A dummy. Yes, they should buy dummies for all of us because we refuse to think and we refuse to organize and we refuse to act. Centers like these could be live. Centers like these could be humming and buzzing, but empowering us rather than disempowering us or keeping us on a flat line in the society, a flat line socially, a flat line economically, and definitely a flat line spiritually. Give salawat to the Holy Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. Allahumma salam. I make dua I don't lose my job. Because I'm going to tell you like it is. That's what the Imam is talking about. Not just to give each other individually in charity, but to create the structures to make people not needing to beg. To give people the training and the structures to have them being independent. When you had the Muhajirun who went to Medina, this is what they did. They started off being supported by the Ansari brothers, but it didn't last long because they had initiative and they taught each other. They taught each other how to do business. We have people in our community who are filthy rich. And I emphasize that word filthy. Filthy rich. But they do not put themselves at the service of our community. I heard recently about one of them giving money to the Ismaili community because they were attracted by the educational program. And somebody was asking them, well, why don't you use your money to encourage that type of a program in our environment? There is a 12 Imam in Shia behaving in this manner. How do we expect to progress? How do we expect to make a name for ourselves in this place? How do we expect to have influence on the government? How do we expect to have influence on these people when we continuously think about ourselves as mere individuals and only as guests of Her Majesty and not think of yourself as somebody who could make a big difference in this society? We're fooling ourselves and we have to be very careful because we have to answer to Allah for this. The fourth one he says, وَأَنْ يُحِبَّ لَهُ مَا يُحِبَّ لِنَفْسِهِ, to love for his brother, to love for his other mu'min what he loves for himself. To love for the other mu'min what he loves for himself. Many of us love for ourselves and love even more because our brother doesn't have it. And so it gives us some kind of edge upon the other person. It makes you feel better than them. But that very same thing is going to choke you on the day of judgment. It's going to drag you down on the day of judgment. Love for your brother what you love for yourself. And this is something that is not just particular to Islam. This is what we call one of the universal rules, one of the golden rules, to love for another what you love for yourself. And what does that mean? It means anything from helping them get that thing, helping them get that thing, to putting that thing in their service, to giving that thing to them. This is what loving for your brother, what you love for yourself means. We used to have a joke in Qom, you know, because, you know, in Iran you have ta'aruf, you know, you have what they call courtesy, right? You know, we call it courtesy. You know, if you say to somebody, I like your ring, you say, here, it's yours. But when you're in that environment where everybody knows what time it is, everybody knows what the game is, it's fine. You say, no, it's okay, I don't want it, and you get away with that. You come to England, you do that, they say, thank you very much. So we used to have this joke among us where we used to say, for example, I just bought this ring, but I hate it. So I'm not going to give it to you. You have to try to empower. This is what it means. It means trying to empower your brother and sister to get what you would like them to get. Because you enjoy what you have, you want them to enjoy what something like what you have. So they are not married, and you are married, you try to find somebody to get them married. Right now, this is one of our biggest problems in society, in our society. It's very difficult to get married, especially for sisters. There are so few brothers around, so few brothers. It's a man's market. And this leads to problems. And why it's a man's market is because a lot of our brothers are going out there and getting involved with non-Muslim women, for example. Another thing that they do is they don't want to marry anybody in this environment. They don't want to marry anybody in the society. You marry my cousin back there in Lahore, otherwise I'll disown you. You marry my nephew in Baghdad, otherwise I'm disown you. Okay? And so what we have is a whole lot of women in this society who are desperate for husbands but can't get any. Who are you looking after? What community are you looking after? You looking after your sisters? No, you're not. You're not looking after your sisters, brothers. You're looking after your family and your family alone. There is a very ugly thing that is happening in the society also. Because we are not a community, people are marrying strangers that they cannot verify. They're marrying strangers that they can't verify. You know, when you want to get married to somebody, you talk to their parents, but you also talk to people who know them. But most people don't know anybody. So you have sisters, again, because they're the oppressed ones in our society, who, because they need to get married to the first apparent mu'min that comes into their environment. But that person comes from an alien environment. Nobody knows where he came from. The next thing you know, she got married to a devil, not to an angel. It has happened so many times. And it is because communities like these are not stable. By the end of Ramadan, the numbers here would have been decimated. It would be back to a few people praying and nothing at all. And I don't blame the people completely. Blame is with them too. But I blame the fact that we are not using these centers the way we are supposed to do. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.